Hello, I'm Alice Arnold. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. In this episode, I'm talking to the wonderful actress Tracy Ann Oberman. But if you're listening with young children, well, you might want to be warned, there is a tiny little sweary thing quite near the end. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. I'm in a different dressing room today. I seem to live in people's dressing rooms. I'm on a rather comfy bed with Tracy Ann Oberman.
Hello.
Which is very exciting. Now, I'm going to gush for a bit because Tracy Ann Oberman, probably to the general public, may be best known for being in EastEnders. For
Doctor Who, that sort of thing.
That sort of thing, the big telly things. But I've seen you in lots of theatre things. And you are the most incredible actress because every time you do a role, you surprise me and thrill me.
Oh.
And every time you come on stage, it lifts the whole production, whatever production it is. Oh. You just lift it and I go, oh, great.
Oh.
Tracy Ann's coming on now.
Alice,
and
honestly,
I mean that.
That means so much.
You find a character and sometimes they're big characters and you've made me laugh and you've made me cry and everything in between. But you make a choice and it's so brave and courageous, the choices that you make, but they're always incredibly truthful.
Thank you.
So there we go. I've summed up what I think about your acting.
And I have to say, over the years when we have done our radio, you know, we've done a lot of Radio 4 acting together,
we have.
And you are exquisite and brilliant as well.
But you love doing radio still, don't
love
you?
Love it. It's a passion. I love it so much.
Yeah.
And I write for radio and, you know, I write a lot of radio plays as well.
I know, multi-talented.
I'm always very happy to go and do radio.
You do everything. Well, let's go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did read that your parents weren't all that happy when you decided to be an actress because they wanted to be a lawyer.
Anything but an actress.
Right,
because
yeah.
it's such an insecure profession. It was like saying that you wanted to be an astronaut. You know, it's like we'd never met one and how did one become one?
So there was nothing in your family? No drama
actually,
no, in your
weirdly,
family?
On my dad's side, there is... Claudia Winkleman is my cousin.
Okay.
And her side of the family, that was on my dad's side, her side of the family were all artists and writers. And so, but from my mum and dad's sort of perspective, no, there wasn't any actors. And who made a living from acting? And what was, you know, how could you live?
Yeah.
I think my dad's words were, you're going to end up living in a bedsit for the rest of your life with a cat.
Yeah.
So every day I'm not living with just a cat in a bedsit, I feel I'm winning.
Did they make you do a typing course or something as a backup?
No, I
mine
had to do a
did.
Degree. No, did you?
I did a degree and a typing course. I now had to do extra things as well in order to let me go to drama school. I had to do the typing as well. Because it's something to fall back on. What was your degree in?
Well, I started doing classics and then I went and did drama and literature.
That was really
to
useful
horror.
To fall back on, wasn't
right.
it? I found my politics degree like that.
Yes.
Such a useful thing to just fall back
just
on
fall
that
back
degree.
On yeah. But luckily, the day after I left drama school, I got a job. I got an advert. I got a voiceover, first of all.
Oh, wow.
But who knew what that was? I went up for an advert the day after I left and I got this voiceover for After Eights with Simon Goodell. After Eight, it is the after dinner mint after all. And that sort of kept me in shillings for
and then I
got another advert, a visual advert, so that was good. And then the day after that, I got a job with the RSC. So I went to the RSC for 4 years. So I remember thinking, oh, well, you know, I remember ringing my dad going, I don't have to do the typing course yet, do I?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, keep going.
That's a pretty good start.
It was
a pretty good start, yes. And then you continued, obviously, with lots and lots of theatre work and radio work.
Yes.
Then came EastEnders.
Well, I'd done a lot of telly, actually, before EastEnders, a lot of telly. The main thing for me was I'd done a lot of theatre. I did the RSC, I did a lot of rep theatre. And then I went on the Radio Rep. Because I'd done a play by a man called Bernard Copps and filled in one day for somebody who dropped out, and after that they asked me on, and that was great. And then because I was on the Radio Rep, I did a lot of comedy, and because I was doing a lot of comedy, I ended up doing a lot of sitcoms on TV, and then ended up doing quite a bit of telly for years, and then had gone back to the National and all sorts of things, and then suddenly the EastEnders moment happened.
And how did that change fame for you? Because, I mean, you were known in the profession before that, but yeah, there is a difference with fame in soap that is kind of stratospheric.
Absolutely. It was a life changer because I was a really good jobbing actress. You know, I was never out of work. Yeah. I was always working. And I was, you know, I was always either doing a TV or a radio or theatre. You know, there was always something going on. And then I did this play at the National with Ken Branagh called Edmund by Mamet, and that was the first game changer because it was only just under 90 minutes long without an interval. I think it might have been just an hour. Everyone came to see it in the entire world. Mamet, De Niro, all these Americans. It was sold out. It was absolutely a smash hit. There were 23 people. We only, each of us had like one, I think I had two scenes, and Nicky Walker was in it. Yeah. And I mean, it was just brilliant, great cast. And on the back of that, suddenly I did really well in that and I was getting lots of meetings. And then I got asked to come into EastEnders and I was the only name that I hadn't heard of on that list. And within 9 days, I was cast as Dirty Den's wife and hit the ground running and had signed this long 3-year contract thinking, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. And 4 months after that, I, having worked in the industry for 11, 12 years solidly, I was up for Best Newcomer at the National Television Awards. But what was interesting was just at the time, people were quite sniffy about soaps. And were, well, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you going into that? You know, you've just done all this, you did so, you know, so much comedy and drama and you've been in the National and you've got, you know, doing all these things. But I thought that that character was great, and she had developed because so many producers changed while I was in it, and I was only in it for 18 months. Alice.
Yeah, I know. And but what's amazing is what you've managed to do since then, because I think that's why people are funny about soaps, because they think once you're in it, how do you get out of it? How do you progress your career after that?
Yes.
Because you become known for that, and well, for you, you just fell out a bit and hit the ground running again and just went
on
doing...
Yeah, I think three years is the killer, and I only did 18 months. I think once you've done 3 years, you become firmly ensconced both in lifestyle with soap money and also in, you know, I think it's hard to give it up, but I also think that you... you know, you people remember you for that character, and I had 18 months where I was in nearly every episode, and, you know, 17 million people watched that Dirty Den one, and then I just kept going, and then I left. And I did Doctor Who and a series called Sorted straight away and was going to the National to work on a Mike Leigh thing. So in some ways, I was very lucky because I picked up where I left off. You know, I wanted to go back to being a good jobbing actress.
And that's what you did. Sort of and you sort of made a huge impact in a short amount of time rather than a character that was in it for years and years but didn't really have that big storyline. Yeah. You had the great storyline and then left.
Yeah, and people still remember her. And I think what was really good about it was... you know, fame, if that's what you want to call it, it's opened me up to a place where I can do something like stepping out here at the Vaudeville, or I could, you know, write my own projects and people were interested. But it also meant that I couldn't do mockumentaries like you and I used to do, People Like Us and things like that. It suddenly became harder to do.
You can't pretend to be the anonymous person. No.
But then it, you know, it got me involved with things like Toast of London and I guess Friday Night Dinner and all sorts of things. So that was good.
So as you said, we're sitting in your dressing room and stepping out, but this is finishing very shortly.
Yes.
Probably before this podcast goes out, this
you'll
the
see
show
this
will
dressing
have finished.
Room is, was full of flowers and cards, and I'm packing it all up now.
Yeah, it's
getting threadbare.
I was going to say it's almost messy. I don't think Tracy Ann is maybe the tidiest person.
No. I'd like to blame it on packing, but it's like this all the time.
Yes, I can imagine it is. Anyway, you are rehearsing at the same time as performing at the moment because you are going to open in Fiddler on the Roof at Chichester.
Yes.
Which is incredibly exciting and was a little surprise to me. Well, was it to you?
Yes, massively. I've never done tap dancing before, so stepping out was a whole new venture for me.
Okay.
And then to be asked to play Golda in Fiddler on the Roof was great because I've never done a musical before, so this is like a whole other new adventure.
But you can, because you sing, I looked it up,
can
Sabbath
I?
Prayer.
Yes.
And Sunrise Sunset, two of your songs that you'll
and
be singing.
And Tefka.
Yeah.
And Do You Love Me? Yeah, there's quite a tradition.
And you've sung a lot, but just not on stage, or...?
Well, I don't think I've even sung a lot. In the shower.
In the shower?
I did the Beggar's Opera at Stratford years ago, but that was with an ensemble. No, I'm not really a singer. But luckily, I think... You see, I always think of Fiddler as a brilliant play with some great songs.
Well, you can let some of the, dare I say, younger cast members maybe do the singing. bits more.
Well, there's
are you dancing
singers.
In it? Are you
there's
dancing
a bit
in
of
it?
Dancing, but I'm not so scared of the dancing anymore, having
done... Because you've done Stepping Out.
Stepping Out. So I learned to tap dance in four weeks, which was a stretch. But Fiddler is such a personal story to me. It's such a... You know, it's my great-grandmother's story. She came out of the Russian shtetls, the shtetl in the Pale of Settlements, where all the Jews in Russia under Tsar Nicholas were forced to live in one area. They weren't allowed to go into the big cities, otherwise they were arrested and probably killed. And my great-grandmother lived in one of those, in the one in Belarus, and on my mum's side they lived in a place called Kremenskaya, and they lived in a village like Anatevka, and there were lots of pogroms going on in 1903, and my great-grandmother, when she was 14, there were some particularly bad pogroms, and they saved the money to send her on a third-class passage to London to get her out, because there was sort of lots of
horrible
things
going on.
And
that's how
you
ended up. Yeah, she came all here. Because... Yeah. I wanted to ask you about your Jewish faith, because I talked to David Baddiel, who calls himself an atheist Jew, I think.
Right.
But is your faith important to you, or you just feel it's important to tell this story? Well, obviously it's important to tell this story.
Funnily enough, I don't even know whether it's the faith in Judaism. I think it's identity. And the traditions that we sing of in Fiddler on the Roof are the things that keep those communities together. So whilst faith is important, and it's important to be spiritual, I guess, and believe in God, it's much more about keeping those traditions that go right the way back to biblical times. So when we're lighting the Sabbath...
So it's the family tradition.
It's the family and the community, you know, lighting those candles, saying those words, doing that wedding in exactly the same way as it would have been back in biblical times. And there's something incredibly moving about that. But also I think Fiddler is more, you know, it is the ultimate Jewish story, because it actually happened. I always remember we used to have to watch it a lot as a kid, and my grandmother in her Yiddish accent would say, this is not a film, this is, you know, I think she was trying to say this is a documentary.
This is real.
It was like with the songs. But I think, you know, look at where we're at now. It's so zeitgeisty with immigration and everything that's going on, and it's awful. And it just taps into the politics of today. It really
and
has...
And persecuted societies.
But people being forced to flee because of religious and political turmoil and persecution, and not knowing where they're going or where they're going to end up.
Yeah.
And who are you when you leave your home and you leave your traditions and you leave your communities scattered to the four corners? And also your children end up having a different experience to you, and they grow away from what you were. So then who are you, and who are they? And what's your relationship with them?
Now, you've got a daughter.
Yes, yes.
Last I saw, she was a mini-me. She looked exactly like you.
Yes, she's now a 10-year-old mini-me.
Is she a mini-me?
Yeah, a little bit.
Would you encourage her to go into theatre?
I have so encouraged her, and she's just... not interested.
Oh, no,
she
you're
wants to
joking.
Be an architect.
It's always the other way around. People always say, no, I said not, but they're very keen.
No,
if they're really keen, I have to let them.
That's I've tried
brilliant.
Everything. I've given her singing lessons. I've pushed her down. I was like, you will, because I was always told.
Get on the stage.
She's more of a gymnast, I'd say.
Okay.
And she wants to be an architect, so good luck
to
her.
Oh, good for her.
Yes.
Good for her. Well, lots of promise there. Now, I'll ask you a few general musical...
Oh, look, you can hear the tip-tapping there. That's tip-tap dancing.
This is people getting ready for the show, which is due to start very soon.
I know, my dinner, right.
We'll be just a few very quick questions about musical theatre. Are you a musical theatre fan?
Much more. When I was younger, no, I didn't understand it. Now I love a musical. I mean, I love any Sondheim. I love Book of Mormon.
So do I.
And my fate, I just love it.
Love it.
And it's like the best of all worlds. It's just political and funny, and the best musical. But I love all musicals, actually. I really want to see Miranda in Annie. I love a musical.
So if there was a song that you would love to, like a big diva song from a musical, can you think of one?
Do you know, weirdly, if I was ever going to do a musical, it was going to be Fiddler on the Roof, because I think the music is so beautiful. Mm. So just to sing Do You Love Me is amazing. Tradition makes my hair stand on end. Sunrise, Sunset is beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm realistic. And I know I'd like to do I'd like to be in Assassins.
Okay.
That's
good
my
choice.
Musical of choice.
Good choice.
And the number I would like to sing, well, any of the numbers in Assassins, they're all bloody brilliant.
I'd like... Let Me Be Worthy of Your Love, Charlie
Oh,
Darling.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Love that one.
Yeah.
Love that song from that.
I'd like to
Little
say the oh, what was his name? The one who's hung, but he's preaching at the same time.
Oh,
Charles. Guiteau, is it? That's right. Anyway.
Yes, it might be.
Yes.
It might be him. If you could be a character rather than play one,
right.
Be a character from musical theatre, who might it be?
Well, now you're talking. If I could be a character.
Mm.
Oh, just hold on. I'm sure you can edit this massive pause out because I take these questions very seriously.
Well, I know. We don't want just a flippant answer.
I can't even give you one. If I could be a character, I would probably be Oliver. And do you know why? Because he had a really shitty start in life, but he ended up, he's going to go back to the wealth. So I think to have had that horrible experience, well, actually he was sweet and blonde and blue-eyed. I'm sure in the book he wasn't, but then
well,
he goes back to all
Mark
that money.
Lester was,
Mark
though.
Lester. I want to be Mark Lester's
okay.
Oliver.
Right.
Nobody was going to lay a finger on him, but he ends up back in a really comfy bed with tons of money looking out over Hyde Park. Gorgeous.
That's a great choice, and for a brilliant reason. So are we hoping that Fiddler on the Roof, because other productions from Chichester have ended up back in London.
Who knows? Look, it's the brilliant Daniel Evans's first big musical down there as his first season as artistic director. Les Brotherton is designing, and it's a brilliant design. There's some beautiful singers in it. There's one, you know, Chris Jarman's in it as well, playing Laser Wolf. He's brilliant. Chris from Book of Mormon and Harry Potter, amongst others. Who knows?
And a lovely place to spend the summer.
A really lovely
if
place
we
to
get
spend the summer.
Beautiful sunny weather.
What and
a
you
fabulous
know, I feel
place to be.
Total privilege to do if my, for my first musical, and this is the one.
Well, we can't wait to see
I
it.
I can't wait to see
to
you.
Let you have your dinner now before you, well, before you go on stage.
That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast, and if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.